Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Need expert advice on your family's health? Speak to us today at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Okay, we'll move on. I'm joined now by journalist and writer Maggie Armstrong. Good morning, Maggie.
Good morning.
So, Maggie, your first book is out and there's a big buzz around it. It's a collection of sort of interlinked stories called Old Romantics. What I really liked about it is so many people in books are the good people who act rationally and people aren't really like that. And your characters are these kind of flawed, messy people who keep making the same mistakes over and over again. Can you give people a sense of the book?
Well, you're right. It's a collection of short stories, and they are romantic stories, I suppose, between men and women. And they, I suppose, are more interested in what happens when it goes wrong, in kind of obsessive love and dysfunctional love and disillusionment. They go in strange directions, and you know, things don't end terribly well all the time. And I suppose they're interlinked stories, and they're mostly set in Dublin.
And the men are awful in general, kind of. Not awful, awful, but self-absorbed, maybe unreliable, kind of useless kind of men. Are there a lot of those kind of men out there?
God, yeah, it's terrible, isn't it? It's, you know, when I saw these as a collection written down, I thought, oh my God, what have I done? You know, this is just a hatchet job on the male gender. But no, I mean, look, there are some unsuitable suitors, and yeah, I mean, it doesn't, you know, look good, does it?
No.
But the female anti-hero, she's not perfect either.
She certainly isn't.
No.
So I think you've balanced it out there. And then, of course, like, we'd all admit that there's a certain time of life when drama and messy relationships can be kind of exciting, isn't there?
Yeah, unfortunately there is. And I think that's what growing up and learning is about, you know. I think there is an allure in what is dangerous, unfortunately. And sometimes I think in a love story between two people, you know, there can be a moment when you realize you have a choice. You're looking at somebody and something doesn't feel right, and you feel, I could go home now.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes you do the opposite thing to the thing your gut is telling you to do.
Yes. And that could, you could actually make t-shirts with that. I could go home now. I could just walk out the door away from all of this. But Margaret, your character, kind of persists, doesn't she? She kind of keeps hoping in a way, almost an unbreakable belief in kind of, is it romance she believes in?
I think so. And there may be, and I don't know, probably getting into hot water, but there may be a sort of economic dimension to her being propelled towards love and affection. You know, it's really hard to get along, and it makes sense to fall in love with somebody and to combine your finances and to find a way of having a mortgage and you know, to form a family unit. It, you know, it seems frivolous, the idea of dating and romance and flowers and infatuation, but really it is where, you know, it drives and determines your life choices. It determines where you put your savings, and you make decisions that are irrevocable. So I'm not sure that it is that frivolous.
Yeah, that's interesting, because one of the stories, she's basically trying to kind of fall in love with this guy in order that they can have a home together, essentially, or trying to get him to fall in love with her.
Exactly. She deludes herself. I think, you know, that sometimes happens in love. You know, you can literally suspend disbelief, your own disbelief, and cast yourself in this story that doesn't exist in reality.
And it very prosaically, do you think in reality in Ireland today that the story is not so much about a great love, but can be just about getting a house.
Well, I mean, that's what marriage and settling down has always been about. Yeah. And it will evolve through a lifetime. And I think people will fall in love many times and find temptation and trouble everywhere. And yeah, it's certainly in a housing crisis when things are precarious. Like, yeah, of course. You could be compelled towards almost like being rescued, you know. Almost like a kind of Disneyland, you know, that somebody is going to sweep me off my feet and end all these troubles and sort out everything. You know, like there are stock literary characters, you know, there's always, you know, in these kind of heteronormative books that we grew up reading, there's always a man of the world who's older and sensible and, you know, the kind of Mr. Darcy character. I feel that for every Mr. Darcy, there's also a very scheming, calculated little ingenue, innocent, who is setting out to seduce this older man to solve her problems for her. You know, in Pride and Prejudice, when Elizabeth Bennet is reflecting to herself when she visits Pemberley, you know, to be mistress of all this could be something.
Yeah. So I'm willing to overlook a few flaws in the man.
Certainly.
Yeah. Yeah. You were a journalist and you still are dabbling in that area. Was it, it was when you had your first baby that you started writing fiction, was it?
That's right, yes. I did work as a journalist for a number of years and, you know, I think it was very difficult to continue once I had my first baby. Certainly the deadlines, the late nights, you know, because I was an arts journalist and I worked a lot with, you know, writing profiles of actors and directors and musicians. And, you know, I couldn't stay out late anymore. And I could actually put a date on the time I thought I can no longer continue with this. And I think my baby boy was 7 months old and I went out to review The Great Gatsby and The Gate, which was a promenade production where you can kind of touch the actors, and Paul Mescal was playing a very kind of suave, very kind of serene, very young Gatsby, and we were encouraged to wear these, you know, to get up to dress up to the nines, and I was wearing this flapper dress and it was all, you know, a lot of fun. And then I had to go home and have filed my review by the next morning, and I went home and, you know, I had to breastfeed my son through this ridiculous, ludicrous flapper dress. And it was so stressful. You know, I had a computer in one hand and a baby in the other. And, oh, we were also moving house that day or something ridiculous like this. So the bedroom was full of boxes and, you know, it was a sleepless night. And I think that was the end. Paul Mescal's career set off just as mine ended.
No, you're set off. You were started too.
Changed.
That night. Yeah,
different.
Yeah. That will be remembered as an important night in the history of Irish culture. You do write a lot, and I thought very, very insightfully, as far as I could see, about pregnancy, about the actual giving birth, about motherhood as well. And in one way, Margaret finds it a lovely time, and then as well, like is it kind of very lonely as well?
Motherhood, parenthood, I mean, of course it is. Everything's changed utterly. And, you know, particularly for a mother who's just become a mother and given birth, you know, I often think of Nora Ephron's birth story was a complicated cesarean and there were complications. That was, you know, that's what often a young new mother is walking around with. You know, there's physical trauma, bodily trauma, there's sleep deprivation, you can be delirious for lack of sleep. And, you know, it's a really bewildering time. You can have differences at home with your partner as to how to parent. And certainly, in my experience, I think like culture really goes off the radar for a young mother. It you know, that there's groups, parent groups are encouraged, but there's very little to do in terms of your own life, you know, the life of the mind.
Yeah. What happens to that? So you're a mother now. You're a mother now, and you hang around with other mothers and you talk about mother things, is it?
Well, I guess so. And there's that sort of conformity. And I remember even in the breastfeeding groups, everybody had the same type of changing bag, and that's it, that Sophie giraffe everybody had carried around, like a sort of sword. And you know, it just it did feel lonely to me. I remember, you know, a couple of my friends and I saw this happening and we thought, oh my god, you know, we have to find something to do. And we set up a book club when our babies were very small, and the first book we read was Philip Roth's My Life as a Man.
Okay.
Which was just this utterly misogynistic, hilarious rant. It's a brilliant book, but it was the antithesis to motherhood, and that was what we needed.
And Margaret, also, there's a kind of a separation going on over the course of motherhood in the book as well, but that does reflect your own experience as well, doesn't it? Which must make things doubly difficult.
To write as a separated person? Yeah, I mean, as a single parent, I think to write always is, you know, everything conspires against sitting down at your desk and banging out whatever number of words you've committed to doing. As a single parent, I mean, it's borderline impossible. Like even, you know, laptops, computers, like one of the casualties, there's a lot of casualties with a separation.
Yeah.
You know, there's Christmas morning, it's a veil of tears. There's, you know, there's summer holidays, there's Easter holidays, bank holiday weekends.
Okay, there's a lot.
There's a lot. Yeah. Everything shifts and your labor is divided in half, your skills are divided. You're working overtime every day. It's great. I mean, it's a happy thing to move on and set yourself free and set your partner free and for your children. You know, I think it's a really powerful thing that you can do. But, you know, to write is really difficult. Like my laptop, because, you know, another of the casualties is technology. Like, I happen to be a technophobe. I have no idea. I don't really even know how to save documents on my computer. And, you know, my kids share my computer because, you know, we just haven't figured out a TV yet.
Yeah.
They get like crumbs and juice and, you know, I have like letters missing on my computer.
Well, you know what, Maggie? All the more of a triumph then that you've produced a book like All Romantics. It really is terrific, and it's published by Tramp Press, and it's out, I think, this Thursday, isn't it? Or is it out?
That's
now?
Right. Yeah. This Thursday, it's going to be launched.
Okay. Well, congratulations and good luck with everything. I think we'll be hearing a lot more of you, Maggie Armstrong. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.